Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Days like this as a Georgia fan make me like my coach so much more. I tell you what, sometimes the side-by-side comparison between Kirby Smart, some of his rivals, really makes Kirby look good and really makes some of those other guys kind of look not so good, and especially in this case, Florida coach Dan Mullen. By now, many of you have maybe seen some of the stuff that Mullen has said. I know there's a piece up on it at DogNation.com as well, and you better believe around here, we believe that good Georgia fans are Gator haters, and we love it when the Gators are easy to hate, and Dan Mullen certainly is easy to, at least in a sporting sense, hate right now. So let me kind of dive into this and make what I think is a, you know, an obvious point where Kirby's a big winner. Dan Mullen comes across like a really big loser on this, a bigger loser than he normally comes across, I guess. So here is the backstory and kind of how we get to where we are today. You probably saw earlier this week that Georgia has announced more big non-conference series. Previously announced a home-and-home return against Clemson. That's exciting for dog fans of a certain age like myself who grew up in the 80s. Texas going to Austin. Who wouldn't want to do that? You add to that what's already in the books for Georgia, like UCLA and things of that nature. And then you had another series with Clemson added this week, and then also a chance for Georgia to go to Florida State. Now, all these things are like way into the future, you know, 10 years or so into the future, you know, deep into the future for most of these series. But nonetheless, they are on the books and they are scheduled. And it's a chance for this week and kind of, from a national college football standpoint, what is kind of not really that heavy of a news cycle, not a ton going on in the national world of college football, for Georgia to do what it does this week, even when you're looking way into the future for most of these games to be played, when Georgia does what it does give Georgia a chance to dominate that news cycle. It gives Georgia a chance to get what a lot of college football programs can't earn for themselves. National attention, national praise. Georgia got some of that. Because let's face it, this is one of the things that fans, media, and for the most part, anyone who cares about college football, other than sometimes the coaches who play the games, everybody just wants better games. Everybody just wants better scheduling, more fun, cross-regional matchups, more of that kind of stuff. And as it stands right now, Georgia's kind of leading the way in doing that. Because remember, in most of these years coming up where Georgia is going to be playing one of these non-conference series, with Georgia Tech presumably still on the schedule, you're going to have like three Power 5 non-conference opponents every single year to go along with whatever Georgia's playing in the SEC as well, at least as it's currently scheduled right now. That means in some cases it's like Texas and Clemson in the same month, or, you know, Florida State and Texas in the same years, you know, so different things like that. It's going to be just an overwhelming number of big-time non-conference games. And as Kirby Smart explained this week, when it comes to his scheduling philosophy, assuming that he's still here then, and as of right now, there's no reason to think that he won't be, but from Kirby Smart's standpoint, there is a very specific reason why Georgia wants to lead the way in scheduling like this. And here is how Georgia coach Kirby Smart explained that earlier this week.
I'm thinking that to get in the playoffs, as the future goes, I don't know whether they'll ever expand it. That's not for me to even kind of divulge on. But I do think that you're going to need a quality of schedule to do that. I think that there's going to be two lost teams in the future if they've got a really tough schedule that'll be able to make that. I also think at the University of Georgia, you should be able to recruit the finest, best players in the country out of your own state and across the country, because our academic institution is so highly thought of. So I want to have the best players. I want to play the best teams. Kids come to college to play big games. They don't come to play, I would never name anybody, but they don't come to play anybody, the Sisters of the Poor. They want to play the best teams. So we want to go schedule the best teams. Unfortunately, you can't schedule these games but 7 to 10 years out. And that's so frustrating to me, because I can't think about 7 to 10 years out. I'm trying to think about tomorrow and this year, and you're having to schedule way in advance. But we thought three Power 5 opponents, non-conference, would be not groundbreaking, but we thought it would be a new thing, and we're not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to go out and play. I mean, you look at the NFL teams, and I know those are, you know, different players, but they play 16 teams in a season that are all good. There's no cupcake in the NFL. They play back-to-back-to-back quality opponents, and we want our fan base to get that. We also want our fan base to get potentially what might be 7 consecutive home games, non-conference Power 5 opponent. and we're trying to get that lined up for them and play some good rivalries. I think it's going to help us in recruiting. I always do, and I like playing in Atlanta as well.
Now, I know that's a little bit longer audio clip than we would typically play on the show, but the reason why I play the full clip of Kirby there is because it's good. I mean, how do you not leave that statement from Kirby as a Georgia fan saying, I like my coach? I like the fact that he says, we're not afraid to play these kinds of games. We're not afraid to play Florida State. We're not afraid to play Clemson. We want to play Clemson. You know, we're not afraid to play Notre Dame. We're not afraid to play Texas. All these games are going on. Georgia says, we're not afraid to do these kinds of things. And I think that from a just football fan standpoint, when your coach says that, there's a, yeah, that's kind of what you want to hear from your coach. But there is also, I think, something else really interesting going on here. I think there's a cool strategy at play here. And Kirby Smart doesn't say this out loud. And there's a chance he's not thinking what I'm thinking on this. But strategically, it does make sense for Georgia, assuming it's going to be able to keep on recruiting at the pace that it's recruiting right now. It's smart for Georgia to want schedules to be tougher. Because if you've got the best players, then you will benefit the most from a tough schedule. The teams that benefit from weaker schedules are teams that don't have overwhelming talent advantages over their opponent. If that be the case, then you want, you want easier schedules because it makes it easier for you to hopefully put together a good record. Think about some of these Big Ten West teams that have had good records in recent years. They've played for the most part weak schedules to get there, yet they're 11-1 at the end of the year or late in the season undefeated saying, we belong in the discussion of being the best. They benefit from the schedules that they play. But if you can force everybody to play, big-time conference schedules and, three really good non-conference opponents, then at that point in time, the balance of power shifts dramatically back in favor of the teams who have the talent and the depth to win week after week playing, as Kirby Smart said, a scheduled like an NFL team would play. So it's fun for fans, but it's also a strategic advantage for the teams with the most talent, which brings us to another program that's apparently thinking in a very different manner. Credit to the local media in Gainesville, Florida yesterday that asked Florida coach Dan Mullen, hey, did you see what Georgia just did? They just added Florida State and Clemson to go along with the SEC schedule they're already playing. They're playing, now, they didn't mention this out loud, the reporter, but playing Notre Dame this year. Did you see all this? Did you see what Georgia's doing? And listen to Dan Mullen, the Florida coach, start to backpedal here. This is Weasley from old Dan, but you'll like it as a Georgia fan. Here it is.
We play Florida State, so people are trying to catch up to us with how tough our schedule is. To be honest with you, I mean, we play Florida State every year, right? I mean, people made big, I guess, if Georgia's playing them, they're trying to catch up to us, I guess, and toughen their schedule. Because we play one of the toughest schedules. I think, boy, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody non-conference next year. We're playing Miami and Florida State.
I just mean long-term. Do you see?
That?
Would you like a home and home? Like, they're maybe looking at Oklahoma. That's a report. I don't know if it's true. Would you like to get something?
Well, we already have that with Florida State.
Okay,
I think that's one thing that probably gets looked down upon. Would it be better to drop Florida State and schedule Oklahoma? And that probably wouldn't go over so well. So we already have that in scheduling. Scott and I talk about it. We play in the Southeastern Conference, so we're already playing one of the toughest schedules in the country.
Oh, listen, I hope that Dan Mullen never changes. I hope he stays Florida coach for the rest of my life. I hope he stays there saying things like that, doing things like that. The current state of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party rivalry could not be better. You got Kirby Smart saying, bring on the toughest opponents we can play. Bring on Texas and Clemson the same season. Let's add Florida State. Let's do some more stuff with Clemson. Let's play Notre Dame in 2019. Let's do all of that. And you've got Dan Mullen saying, but we already play Florida State, and we're playing Miami this year. Nobody plays a tougher non-conference schedule than us. Miami's got a first-year coach. Florida State's the dregs right now. It's the worst state that program's been in decades. He seems to either be willfully ignorant of or just ignoring the fact that Georgia's playing Georgia Tech this year, which really, right now, Georgia Tech and Florida State aren't that different as programs, unfortunately. And Georgia's going to play a preseason top 10 Notre Dame team. But nonetheless, Dan Mullen knows what he's doing here. He's gaslighting on all of this. He's pretending one thing's true when something else is true. But ultimately, what's going to end up happening here is not so much this is going to hurt him in his rival with Georgia. Kirby Smart and the talent that Kirby Smart's recruiting is going to do plenty to hurt Mullen in that regard. But when Mullen brags about playing Miami finally, which Florida doesn't do enough, and Florida State every year, and right now Florida State's not very good, it's his own fans he's going to hurt himself with. Because as he says there, hey, listen, I'm talking to my athletic director, Scott Strickland, about this. We're working on some scheduling stuff. Well, I was able to get a little bit more insight into some of the scheduling stuff that Florida might be working on. There's a guy named Pat Dooley who writes for the Gainesville Sun, has covered Florida for a very long time, and he went into some detail on a recent podcast about exactly the kind of scheduling stuff Florida might be looking to do. And if you're a Georgia fan, once again, you'll find this interesting because it doesn't seem like Dan Mullen quite as courageous as Kirby Smart when it comes to non-conference scheduling. Here's Pat Dooley on Dan Mullen.
But what's interesting to me is that Florida State and Georgia have committed to play in 2027 and 2028. And I'm sensing, and I've talked to Scott about this. Scott has been trying like heck to book some Power 5 teams. They want to do some home and homes with them. Power 5 teams, not alleged national champions.
So not Oklahoma then, and not Clemson then, which would be a non-conference game for Georgia. Not that kind of stuff. In the same conversation, Pat Dooley goes on to say, it's maybe a team like a Kansas State or maybe a team like a Boston College. Listen, this comparison could not be more clear. Right now, Kirby Smart looks like a very brave coach willing to take on all comers, and Dan Mullen looks like a coach cowering in the corner making excuses for why his team does not want to schedule up. And in the long term, the big winner, both in terms of national perception and perception from its own fan base, in this case, I believe, is going to be Kirby Smart. All right, I am running way late here, so let me pick up the pace here. It's Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. We got Jeff Sintel coming up with some recruiting talk in just a moment. We'll also go around the doghouse here, presented today by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. Great to have them as a part of Dog Nation Daily. And I apologize for going long off the top on the Dan Mullen thing, but how can you not get a little fired up when Mullen essentially lies, certainly exaggerates the truth as a way of making it sound like his schedule's the toughest non-conference schedule in the country, and Georgia's just trying to catch up with us. Listen, Georgia hasn't been trying to catch up with Florida since, what, 888 days ago? Pretty much ever since then, Georgia has been on a plane and a trajectory that those lousy, stinking Gators can only dream of. Yeah, there you go. We'll do it again later in the show. But 888 days, that's how long it's been since Georgia has beaten Florida. All right, so I don't have a ton of time here for our Around the Doghouse, but I do want to try to squeeze in one thing, because if you get a chance, I want you to go to DogNation.com, as I like to call it, the world-famous DogNation.com. Really good piece up on Jamari Salyer, a guy that we've talked about a good bit here on Dog Nation Daily a bit. You may remember it wasn't that long ago, a few days ago, that Kirby Smart said, when it comes to offensive linemen, the most improved offensive lineman on our roster right now is Jamari Salyer. That's a guy that's night and day different from where he was a year ago. And boy, that got some attention. And then Kirby kind of puts his money where his mouth is beyond that. You saw Salyer working some in a first-team situation as a first-team right guard when the media was viewing practice the other day. He's also worked around a bit at tackle, according to Smart. We'll hear from Salyer in his own words on that in just a moment. But pretty clearly it seems that Salyer, a five-star offensive line signing from the class of 2018, a guy that Jeff Sintel says may be the best interior offensive line prospect he's ever seen. We didn't get a chance to see a ton of that on the field from Salyer in his first year. Really, two other freshmen, Trey Hill and Cade Mays, played more a year ago than Salyer did. But 2019 might be the year that Salyer comes into his own. He spoke to the media about a number of subjects yesterday. You know, the patience that he's shown, the fact that he didn't get what Mays and Hill got a year ago, a chance to go through spring practice and be a part of the first G-Day. He talked a lot about that yesterday and what kind of right now this spring has been a coming out party for Salyer. Here's a taste of what you can get more of both at DogNation.com and the Dog Nation video channels with Jamari Salyer.
I mean, I'm just working every day to get better. That's been my whole MO since I got here. It's never been like, I just want to beat that guy. Like, I just want to get better for me. and maximize my potential. I think since I've been here, I've probably played about every position. They're definitely in practice, but I've been all over the place. But mostly this spring, I've been on the right side and center. Mm-hmm. So.
Retrospectively, do you think not being able to come here that spring put you behind a little bit, and that's why you're getting where you are now?
I mean, everybody wishes they had a spring ball as a freshman. I mean, I think that's like the biggest advantage you could have. But, I mean, I'm not salty about it. I'm not down about it. I mean, Pace Academy was great for me, and they told me I couldn't come early, so I just went along with it. I enjoyed my second semester of my senior year, and I just went along with it. So I'm not salty about it. I'm just taking it as it comes.
I love that attitude from Salyer. I think that's what he's going to use to his benefit as he worked his way maybe on the field as, if not a starter, certainly a major contributor and major part of the depth for Georgia's offensive line. But let's not give up on the idea that Salyer may be able to unseat one of those expected starters and become a part of that first five there himself. I made the comparison at DogNation.com on Sunday between Salyer and what happened with Isaiah Wilson last year when he used, for him in 2017, was a redshirt year to work his way up to freshman All-American status as a redshirt freshman a year ago. Salyer's not a redshirt. He did play enough last year to qualify, but he could be following a similar path to Wilson, and the deepest offensive line arguably in the country may have another very, very compelling piece in Salyer, and that is certainly a lot of fun to think about that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Merriweather and Tharp here today on Dog Nation Daily. We want to keep the fun rolling on right now. A lot of UGA recruiting talk to get into. The guy that I mentioned a moment ago is our recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. He's got good thoughts on a number of subjects, so let's welcome him into the program right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Jeff Sintel on this Friday. Always a fun conversation with Mr. Sintel. And Jeff, before we get into the recruiting news of the day, I was just talking about a guy that you know well, Jamari Salyer, who met with the media for a moment yesterday. And I think we've seen a cool thing the last couple of years where you know, a lot of these guys have had to come in, forced to be a little patient early. In Salyer's case, that was certainly true last year when he saw two freshman offensive linemen who were, as recruits, rated lower than him, have better freshman seasons than Salyer did, get more playing time. And yet you hear him yesterday say, I'm not salty about all of this. I'm just going to keep working and play whatever position they tell me to play. And it certainly seems like that attitude is working well for Salyer right now, right?
Yeah, I think that's the thing fans should kind of grow accustomed to. Number one, it's the quality, depth, and competition. You know, much has been said that maybe Georgia's second team offensive line could be the starting line for about everybody in the everybody outside of the Alabama category in the SEC. I got to remember with these kids, as much as we recruit, as we talk about their recruiting and how heavily they're recruited for Georgia, the way that Jamari Salyer looks at this is it's not how good he is in 2018. It's how good he is in 2021. That's when he has his junior season, and then could potentially project into the NFL draft. And Brandon, you think about it, he's pushing guys like Ben Cleveland, Isaiah Wilson, Solomon Kinley, Cade Mays.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be someone's, I mean, like for instance, that gentleman that's at the SEC school to the south of us, he would be running off his mouth a whole lot more if his offensive line looked like that. And that's not even the first-team elite group at Georgia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't want to make this entire discussion about offensive line, but there is a point that I've made a couple times, Jeff, that I think you'll agree about. So let's say that the starting five offensive line for Georgia is what we thought it was at the start of the preseason. Maybe Hill at center, Kinley and Cleveland are the two starting guards, and Thomas and Wilson are the two starting tackles. Look what you have as your next two guys beyond that. Between Cade Mays and Jamari Salyer, there is a chance, you know, Mays can play both tackle spots and probably both guard spots. Salyer can play both guard spots. He can play right tackle according to Kirby, and he would be a center. You potentially have two guys that between the two of them could cover all five offensive line spots at an all SEC potential level. To have, you know, sort of the left side, you know, Swiss Army knife, Cade Mays, the right side of the offensive line, Swiss Army knife, and Jamari Salyer, that's an insane level of versatility from your next two offensive linemen, assuming that Salyer and Mays don't work their way into the starting lineup before the season begins.
Yeah, and it makes your top five feel more like a top eight or top nine because they can get to different spots. And here's one for you, Brandon. It's been well documented how Georgia sometimes struggled in short yardage and in goal line situations. What about after the end of a physical smash mouth, run it down their throats, drive. What if Sam Pittman just takes a tap to the shoulder of Kenley, a tap to the shoulder of Cleveland, and then rolls in Salyer and rolls in Mays to finish off that drive from maybe first and goal at the 3 or 4, where the guys you rotate in, and this is not Nolan Richardson in Arkansas or UNLV basketball, but what it is what if you have guys that, you know, they're big gentlemen, they wear down. What if you can rotate those guys a little bit more with no drop-off, where maybe some of those salty defensive tackles are playing 50, 60, 70 plays a game, but yet they're dealing with an elite Georgia lineman that's only playing maybe 40 plays a game. I think that makes a difference in the trenches.
I think you're right about that. I think that's very well said. Let me transition to 2020 recruiting talk. And you and I discussed this briefly as part of DN90 earlier this week when we were both in Athens. And I wanted to make sure we made this conversation a part of Dog Nation Daily as well. The fact that 5-star running back Kendall Milton has made it official, he will be at G-Day. You explained on the video why this is even better news than some might think, just given the nature of the visit. And I hope you'll go into some detail on that. So let me kind of just open-ended say, start talking about Kendall Milton, and then we'll kind of pick up the conversation there, because you know, Jeff, I'm over the moon about this. This is what I wanted to happen. It looks like it's shaping up to happen in kind of the manner that I guess I would have preferred. I just think this is really good news, so I was hoping you'd talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I think we did this recently on one of our platforms where we talked about who would be the ideal G-Day visitor. And definitely Milton's name was right at the top, because he needs to take his first visit to Georgia. And what better way for him to soak up everything that the Georgia football program has to offer with like a dog walk, with like 75,000 in the stands for a spring game. I mean, that's more than UCLA and USC, some of his hometown teams out there in California. That's more than those schools get for a big Pac-12 conference game. So you see... you see the ability for Georgia to put its best foot forward there with Kendall Milton. And it also offers up some avenues here. It's the avenue where he sees a spring game at Georgia, where he doesn't see a spring game at Oklahoma per se. He doesn't see a spring game at Alabama per se. And yet he also offers the ability, with him being in Alabama on the 17th, is it offers up the ability for him to spend multiple days at Georgia as well. Not just that one day barnstorming visit. Yeah. That someone I talk to a lot and frequency brings up a lot. But this is a kick your feet up, put your feet on the table, kick back and chillax, maybe watch a Netflix or something like that, maybe walk the friendly confines of downtown Athens during a lovely spring day. I mean, lots of possibilities there for Kendall Milton to get kind of cozy with Georgia.
So you've spent some time with Milton, and, you know, based on what I've read from you about him, he seems like a very smart, thoughtful guy, and I'm curious, given your interactions with him and your interpretation of his thought process, when he's in Athens for that time, specifically on April 20th for G-Day, is he going to be watching what happens between the lines more of how are they using running backs? And now I know the spring game's not the same thing as a real game, but put that aside for a moment. Or is he going to be wanting to soak up the atmosphere and saying, hey, could I see myself being a part of this university community? Which of those two things, given your interactions with him, are going to be more important on that particular weekend? The business part of what's happening between the white lines, or the more touchy-feely part of what does it feel like to be between the hedges?
I think it's kind of layered there, Brandon. I think both of those work hand in hand. And I think they can work in Georgia's favor. I think the real thing for him to see, especially given, you know, Zamir White's still going to be on the DL, and you're still going to see limited a little bit with DeAndre Swift. They also want to protect the bell cow right there at running back. So especially with the red and black format, can you imagine Kendall Milton looking down on that game and seeing, okay, there's Herrien on that side, there's Swift on that side, there's Cook on this side, and then there's walk on. I mean, yeah, Kenny McIntosh is on the way. He knows that. But you see a lot of open competition there for Georgia in the backfield. And that's what he liked about Georgia. He liked the fact that Georgia checked almost every box for him, especially the box where Georgia is a premier program with tradition, with the Gurleys, the Michelles, the Chubbs in the NFL that really like to run the rock. But he also does not see 5 or 6 dudes as well at that position group for the next 2 years like he could at other schools. And I think that spring day spectacle where, let's say, DeAndre Swift only gets limited touches, and let's see, you know, Zamir White is obviously still not going to be available, and Kenny McIntosh is still not there. Really, the only backs that you can anticipate getting a lot of touches in spring ball for Georgia might be a James Cook, might be a Brian Harrion. And that's got to look pretty good to a recruit coming in wondering, because this family made this very clear to me. They do expect Kendall to have the ability to come in and play right away as a freshman somewhere.
Yeah.
And for Georgia fans, what if the University of Georgia is actually one of those somewheres?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good thought. Milton joins Keely Ringo, another five-star prospect who's already made it official that he will be at G-Day there that day. What's the next domino that you're looking, not a prediction of this guy will be here, but curiosities from you in terms of the next dominoes that could fall when it comes to G-Day attendees?
Well, I'm sure you'd love to see four or five bells go off for Georgia, maybe like potentially the two or three that could go off for Clemson. You know, there's a lot of the in-state guys to think about there. I see a guy like Zacchaeus Walker is a guy that Georgia has a really good shot at. I'm sure, Brandon, you noticed on the Daily Phone or the Daily News Telegraph that came across your phone, Jermaine Burton is going to take but he's going to take a visit to LSU for its spring game this weekend.
Yeah.
I think that's a very interesting thought pattern right there. But, you know, I do still think it's going to come time sooner rather than later when a 2021 prospect shows up. I mean, this is the longest it's been in the Kirby Smart era where the Bulldogs have not worked 1 year ahead with at least one kind of initial recruit in a initial public recruit in a class going forward ahead of the current class. You see things like some of the things coming out around Tate Ratledge. Tate Ratledge is a guy that I think doesn't want to take this a long way with his decision much longer. And it does seem that Georgia and Tennessee are the ones that are very clear in Tate Ratledge's mind as well. Usually sometimes things like G-Day are the things that kind of put a school over in a prospect's mind, especially what a Georgia G-Day looks like. And maybe since we were just speaking about running backs, I kind of think back to that first 93K day and how instrumental it was for a lot of Bulldogs, most notably an out-of-state Bulldog like DeAndre Swift.
So you mentioned the Clemson spring game, and I do want to talk about that just for a minute. It is tomorrow, and you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of recruiting stuff going on there, but I'm interested more about what's kind of on the field for a moment because, as I said on yesterday's show, you know, all those, like, and I'm going to kind of use positions, I guess I'm interchangeable here, but all those kind of, you know, defensive front guys from that team this past year are kind of all moving on the NFL, and look what Clemson's going to have on the field tomorrow, guys that could be stepping in that spot. You know, these are names that you and I over the years have talked about in this space from a recruiting standpoint that at one point in time maybe could have gone to Georgia. Guys like Xavier Thomas and Justin Maskell and K.J. Henry and all those guys. I mean, pretty clearly, Clemson's done a pretty good job of saying if you want to get after the quarterback, if you want to make tackles for loss in the backfield, if you want to be, to use Kirby's word from this spring, the havoc-wreaking, you know, defensive player, you know, come here and play for Brent Venables and come here and be a part of this defensive front for the Clemson Tigers. And reputationally, that seems to be benefiting Clemson right now with two of the names that we talk about pretty frequently, Miles Murphy and Brian Brzee. I'm not crying over spilt milk. I'm not, you know, whining about this. I'm just kind of pointing out, Jeff, based on the conversation we also had on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday. Right now, it seems like that Georgia has some reputational challenges to overcome. I believe that makes Trayvon Walker really important. He's got to come here and be dominant when he gets a chance to be on the field. You know, some of the other guys, more, you know, outside linebacker types, may have to do some of that same kind of stuff so that Georgia can say, we get pass rushers to the NFL the same way that a team like Clemson does or a team like Alabama does or even really Ohio State that, you know, over the years has been really good at that. Reputationally, Georgia's got to improve in that regard, don't they?
Well, I think you got to remember, Brandon, it's not even 5 years old where Georgia has placed Lorenzo Carter and Leonard Floyd into the NFL as well. Leonard Floyd, my memory serves, Roquan Smith and Leonard Floyd are the only top 10 draft picks at linebacker over the last 5 or 6 years, where Georgia got an inside backer and an outside backer there. But to speak to your greater point, I'll just call upon some content right now that's on DogNation.com. That's the great interview with Jamari Salyer. Jamari is always going to be great in front of a mic, in front of a podium. kind of going to represent the program really well in terms of maybe after the not so good news of the week where Georgia, I thought it was interesting how Georgia sent some of its best PR or most representative, great ambassadors of the program going forward with guys like Andrew Thomas and guys like Damari Salyer and Solomon Kinley, guys that will represent the G well. But did you hear that interview, Brandon, those conversations where Damari was talking about how fast N'Kobe Dean is right now and how fast Nolan Smith is right now? And listen, for someone like Damari to notice defensive guys who he's charged to block as being really, really fast, that's like you at a convention of podcasters saying, you know what, that fellow right there, he really likes to talk. He can really move that mouth a little bit. When Damari says that, you take notice.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And so as you're kind of pointing out, maybe some of the guys in this 2019 roster right now and some of the guys who are on their way arriving this summer, you know, can kind of help, you know, evolve that perception of Georgia as a program that does everything well. You know, we've seen the way that, you know, obviously running back is, you know, thought to be running back university. The offensive line, the way that group has been overhauled since Kirby Smart's been here. What's happening along the defensive front, I think, faces a similar challenge right now. Not because it's not good, it's just not maybe perceived to be as great as some other programs. And if you want to win with the Murphys and the Brzees and people like that, I think you've got to be able to kind of cast that perception about the program. So we'll see how that goes. Let me talk about something else, Jeff, for a moment. And you're going to tell me this is a nothing, and I'm sure you're probably right about that. I have, for the most part, kind of, I guess, written off Rakeem Jarrett to Tennessee. My assumption is that seems to be where all the chatter points him as of late. He does retweet a tweet from not too long ago of him on the Georgia campus over the last couple of days. It's not a new tweet of a new visit. It's an old retweet from a previous Georgia visit. I'm assuming this is just a false positive, right? And the Jarrett story, for the most part, with Georgia is kind of over. Am I correct for saying that?
Well, never say never. Never say over with these volatile, mercurial personalities and everything else like that. But I'm sure you caught the chatter, you know, the other chatter to pay attention to. Lots of people notice tweets. Pay attention to deleted tweets, because I think there was some delete Twitter crossfire going back in the deleted Twitter category where Mikael Sherman, his teammate, and Rakeem Jarrett were talking about, you know, some people think they're a package deal. Some people dismiss the fact that they're a package deal. That's the more accurate statement right there. But there was a tweet he sent out that said, same conference, different divisions, which, you know, and then there's another tweet from Jermaine Burton sent out where Rakeem Jarrett talks about, number one team in the country, number one recruiting class in the land. And the one about the same conference, different divisions, I'm sure that one probably caught your eye, because that's speculating that both of them will end up in the Southeastern Conference, but at different divisions of the conference. And, you know, Mikael Sherman is a guy that's trending towards either Georgia or Ohio State in everyone's book. And I would say that the only way those two would both end up in the same conference is would be if a school like LSU or Alabama ends up being the home for Rakeem Jarrett.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And sometimes with a lot of the social media stuff, it's sort of difficult to tell what is what. But obviously, you know, based on, you know, what I've kind of read from you and, you know, just the general chatter that's out there, it certainly seems like Georgia's in better shape for, you know, a linebacker right now like Sherman than it is for a wide receiver like Jarrett. So you can kind of, it's almost like an algebra equation where you start solving for X. Well, if this is true, then what does it make that be true? And so that'll be an interesting thing to follow along with. And since you brought up Jermaine Burton, I guess I'll ask you a quick question on this. Do you think, as of today, which I believe is April 5th, he is 15 days out from his decision April 20th. Does Jermaine Burton know today what announcement he's going to make on April 20th? I won't even ask you to tell me which of these schools that it is. You mentioned the fact that he's going to LSU. That spring game is tomorrow as well. I won't even ask you to tell me which school you think he chooses. Does he know today which school he's choosing April 20th?
Here's what I think, Brandon. I think these are maybe affirming visits he has up ahead, and maybe he's gonna, you're gonna see where he goes and where he does not go as an example of the schools that are really in it for him. This is a young man, I think, that could benefit from having some stability in his career, which means he's going to end up, he wants to sit somewhere and put some roots down and know that I'm going to be with the same team, the same trainers, the same teammates, the same coaches for a while. I think that's what he's looking for, especially given his talent level and this early decision. You know, far be it for me to ever, you know, place a suggestion box in your wonderful show here at all times, but I think maybe the name you need to turn the heat up on, maybe turn the burner down on Jermaine Burton, and maybe turn the burner up is, I think maybe you need to start thinking and looking at that film and telling folks about that Ringo fella out in Arizona.
Wow.
I know we spend a lot of time on Kendall Milton because running backs are the thing at Georgia, and it is RBU with a lot of really great foundational backup data points to definitely give credence to that. But that Ringo, again, we're going to have a second trip to Georgia. Neither of these are official visits yet. And he's all the way out in Arizona where he doesn't really have a dominant program, a dominant in-state program as one to watch out for and everything else. Ringo, sir, might just be a thing for the University of Georgia in the long run, at least to make sure this fan base and this mighty fine audience of ours knows that name.
Quick final thing for you, Jeff. What did you make of Dazlin Worsham, the Alabama commit, being on the Georgia campus recently? I think we may have some evidence of Worsham on the UGA campus to show here. Listen, I always like it when Georgia gets in the mix with an Alabama commit. I don't ultimately know where this is going or where this is heading, but it's always fun to me when Georgia gets an Alabama commit on campus. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, Worsham's an interesting guy. He's a really fast guy. But he hasn't really shown up in a lot of the big games. I think he's more potential rather than on-field production. Talented player, don't get me wrong. Obviously, he was committed to Alabama for a reason. But I think he's a player that needs to show a lot, another gear to his game to really get folks excited about him as an elite top-level prospect. You see things he has to work on. You see things like in the blocking aspect. It already made me wonder about how that would translate to Georgia in ways that I look at the Micaiah Tongue film and I look at the Dominic Blaylock film, and I know that those guys will be just fine at that for Georgia. I think maybe, you know, on the recruiting front, and this is the immediate type guys, I thought it was very interesting a lot of the things that Kirby Smart said about Dominic Blaylock this week, especially about Dominic Blaylock as a punt returner mm-hmm. that's going to get a long look at Georgia once he starts in. And that's very interesting, Brandon, to have one of those guys to, you know, take your breath away, guys back there, that I think was always a chance when you put that scare factor into a special teams unit when they know that guy back there in the red and black could take that thing to the house.
Hey, good stuff, Jeff. Thanks for your time here on our program. We look forward to reading a bunch from you in the days ahead of DogNation.com. We appreciate the recruiting insight when it's good news, when it's bad news, and kind of everything in between. We just like knowing the real story. So thanks for giving us the straight scoop, and we will look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, Brandon, I'm sure you will either revel or make sure everybody knows how well the scorecard looked for Clemson on 5 stars. After their spring game on Saturday.
Yeah, there you go. That's good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Let's roll on here.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So Jeff hates when I do this, but honesty compels me to admit. Whew, a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for here? Letting us down easy maybe once again. We heard some of that on Wednesday when it comes to Miles Murphy, Brian Brzee. Certainly not the most positive appraisal of the Jermaine Burton situation. Burton's a guy that I really like. I'm influenced about Burton because Terrence Edwards really likes him a lot. And we around here like Terrence Edwards. Edwards has spoken about Burton a few times on the Dog Nation video channels. Obviously, Burton's his own man. He's going to make his own decision. So, you know, just because he's coached by Terrence Edwards doesn't mean that he's ultimately going to go to Georgia. But Jeff saying turn down some of the attention, you know, basically dial it down a bit. Maybe foreshadowing what's going to happen on April 20th. That makes you a little nervous because I'd like to have Bert. So get kind of interesting there. I will say that it seems like it's a little bit harder to get a full read on Burton. And I'm guessing part of that's because, as it stands right now, he lives so far away. What is it, Calabasas, California? Is that where he lives right now? And he's a Georgia guy. He's been to a couple different high schools, but he's in California right now. So maybe that's part of the reason why the industry has a little bit of a difficult, task of trying to get a real strong feel for him just because he lives right now a long way away from others. It seems like he's a little bit of a mercurial figure, if I'm using that word correctly, when it comes to this 2020 class. But on April 20th, he'll make his announcement. And yeah, I'd like to have him. I mean, I think the wide receiver is a little bit for Georgia like what we said on the other side of the ball with the defensive front. Georgia's got to produce more sacks. It's got to produce more tackles for loss. It's got to show that it can get those big-time defensive front guys, defensive linemen, you know, classic defensive ends. It's got to show that it can get those guys into the NFL as a very high draft pick. That's part of the reputational challenge that Georgia's trying to establish for itself right now. On the offensive side of the ball, it's the same thing with wide receivers and tight ends. I mean, I'll invite you to go back and check what Arik Gilbert, the five-star tight end, told Jeff Sintel when he spoke to him a couple of Sundays ago, that those intimate conversations he has with the UGA tight ends coach Todd Hartley, it's about the fact that tight ends now, according to Gilbert, relaying what he's been told from Hartley, it's going to be a bigger part of the Georgia offense right now. It is clear that everybody wants the football. Everybody wants to have that, you know, shared and distributed, and so wide receivers are seeing that too. Now, listen, Georgia's also, you know, facing a situation where it's trying to keep a lot of different people happy. It wants five-star running backs to feel like this is the place for running backs. It wants five-star receivers and tight ends to feel like it's the place for them as well. So these are all things being considered first-world problems. But pretty clearly, Georgia's dealing with two major behemoths in its own region. The reigning national champion Clemson, what Alabama has been as the reigning SEC champion, and knocking them off takes as much talent as you can get. So tough recruiting battles. Georgia's involved with a lot of them, but it's going to have to win them to get where it wants to go. All right, let me transition to the SEC through here for a moment. And let me remind you about one of the cool things I think about your local Atlanta Kroger right now. Around here, one of the things you hear us talk a lot about is our pride in Georgia agriculture. And one of the things in particular that comes up for that is, I'm talking about real dairy milk from Georgia cows. That is something that my family just loves. We like the real stuff, not the fake, the phony stuff, because we think that the real stuff is good for you. It's good for your teeth. It's good for your bones. It just tastes good. So I put it in my coffee every single morning. My kids go through gallons of the stuff with every meal, and I could not be happier to see them growing up healthy. And I believe that, you know, real Georgia dairy milk from Georgia cows is one of the things that's getting them there. And beyond that, you know, my wife is a great cook. You know, she's cooking up all kinds of stuff, and a lot of the meals that you enjoy, whether it be in your own home, a restaurant, whatever else, you know, it's that real milk that really is the ingredient in those things that ends up making it taste the way that you want it to taste. I'm talking about shrimp and grits. I'm talking about macaroni and cheese. A lot of those things, that comes from real milk. Real milk's what makes that taste good. So please check out real dairy milk from Georgia cows at your local Atlanta Kroger. All right, Jeff Sintel mentioned there are a number of SEC spring games this weekend, LSU included. I thought this might be fun. Of the four teams that have spring games on Saturday, I thought I might take a look at their season win totals. And maybe if you get a chance to watch some of these games on TV, you can think in this regards of just how good these teams are going to be this year. So let me start with Ole Miss. On Saturday, I believe they call it the Grove Bowl. I believe that's the name of the LSU spring game. Or should I say the Ole Miss spring game. It's the Grove Bowl. Ole Miss is over-under season win total, according to Bet Online, is 6 right now. You can either bet more than 6 regular season wins or fewer than 6 regular season wins. Given the depth in the SEC West right now, somebody's got to be bad. Somebody's got to be terrible. I'm going to go Ole Miss under the 6. I think that is the right play for the Rebels this season. Along the same lines, Arkansas also going off this weekend with its own spring game. Last year, the game was in Little Rock. I think it's back in Fayetteville this year, although admittedly, I don't know for sure. Their over-under total, you can bet over this, more wins or fewer wins than this, is 5.5. I said yesterday I think that Arkansas is slightly a SEC team kind of on the rise, maybe more so than the attention that it's getting. There are a few SEC teams that aren't rising quite as fast as some people might think, and they get extra attention. Arkansas, maybe the opposite of that. They don't get a ton of attention. They may be doing a little better than some realize. Maybe not quite this year. As I said before, if a lot of teams in the SEC West are going to be good, by nature, a couple of teams have to be bad. So as it stands for right now, I'm going to stay under on Arkansas. But this may be an over next year. But for now, it's still an under. I'll go under on both Ole Miss and Arkansas. And then you get to a couple more. LSU, who, as Jeff said, Jermaine Burton going to be in the building tomorrow for them. LSU's over-under total at BetOnline right now is set at 9. Pretty high total for that team. And yet, I'm tempted to go over. Now, you get their tough game against Alabama. Texas A&M is going to be better. You got Florida, the crossover game from the SEC East. I'm kind of a believer right now in LSU. I am tempted to go over the 9 on LSU. And I'm curious to actually watch them that spring game tomorrow. But as it stands right now, I'm going to go over the 9 on LSU for the season. And then one more. South Carolina is at 7 right now, according to Bet Online. Once again, that's a number you can either bet to win more games than that or bet them to win fewer games than that in the regular season. As Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers have pointed out before, South Carolina this year faces a brutal schedule. The SEC East is getting better. They've got to play the out-of-conference game against Clemson every year. Their rotational crossover game in the SEC West this year is Alabama. Alabama rotates on the schedule. Their permanent crossover game is Texas A&M. So I'm a believer that Texas A&M can be a top-10 team. Alabama certainly will be a top-10 team. Clemson will certainly be a top-10 team. I think that Georgia is a given to be a top-10 team. Those are four really, really tough games before you get into whatever Florida is, whatever Missouri is, and whatever anybody else is. Given that schedule, I don't see how South Carolina can go over that. And what happens if they don't? Is there a possibility at the end of the 2019 season Will Muschamp could be in trouble at another SEC school? I'm not pushing for him to get fired, but I'll be interested to see the level of patience that South Carolina fans are willing to show if this season goes badly for him with a really, really tough schedule. That's going to be a very, very interesting scenario to watch play out. As I said yesterday, I think that South Carolina was among the most disappointing SEC teams in the entire league a year ago. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, you know, on Fridays, we kind of view this show as the kickoff to your weekend. We appreciate you spending this first day of the weekend with us on Fridays. And as a way of doing that, we also like to do our Kroger kickoff. Because let's face it, when you're kicking off the weekend, getting ready for some outdoor cookouts or, you know, parties, whatever else, we want you to be thinking about Kroger for that as well, because they are going to make that a lot more fun for you. And it's also fun to kick off the weekend on a weekend like this, where Georgia has a lot going on athletically, and much of this is on campus. So let's update you on a few of these things right now. The Gym Dogs are hosting the NCAA Regionals this weekend. That's going on all weekend long there at Stegman Coliseum. After they had a pretty good showing in the SEC tournament, they will now qualify for the next level of NCAA play. That is going on inside Stegman Coliseum. A massive, massive baseball series for the Diamond Dogs starting today with Emerson Hancock on the mound for the Dogs against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt very highly rated. This is a real measuring stick for Georgia in terms of how it maybe potentially factors into the national conversation. Vanderbilt's been there before. This is a big series for Georgia. My understanding is all three of these games this weekend are sold out. Really hope they get good weather for that, because I'd love to see the Diamond Dogs have a great showing there at Foley Field for that. You got softball hosting Texas A&M. Not only that, though, the track and field team is hosting the Spec Talents this weekend. Tennis is heavily involved with some good stuff. Golf's got some stuff going on. This is about as busy a weekend as you're going to get around UGA athletics, with all the various sports kind of involved with that. And who knows, maybe in years to come, you'll have Georgia involved in the Final Four on a weekend like this. For now, though, that's not happening. But what is happening is a lot there around UGA, a lot of that this weekend centered around Athens. So best of luck to all the UGA programs as they go through that. And by the way, speaking of spring break going on right now, you can earn 4 times the fuel points right now on vacation gift cards at your local Kroger. It's a great way to save up for your vacation, whether you're got one going on this weekend at the end of spring break or one coming up this summer. Take advantage of those 4 times the fuel points savings on vacation cards there at your local Atlanta Kroger. All right, really fun show today. Love the recruiting information from Jeff Sintel. Looking forward to some SEC spring games this weekend. And, you know, off the top of the show, I have a really good time when Dan Mullen says the things that he says. I think that he probably knows that the line he was selling yesterday is a bunch of bunk, that obviously Florida is not playing the toughest non-conference schedule in the country this year, nor do they have that scheduled in the upcoming year. But listen, you got to just say whatever you got to say to get through the day, and I guess that's what Dan Mullen is doing there. But nonetheless, that adds more fuel to the fire of the Gator-hater rivalry and makes the world's largest outdoor cocktail party that much more fun. So for us around here, we're not a bit mad about it. It just makes, we think, Georgia want to go out there and win that game even more and keep that Gatorhead updater number continuing to climb. In fact, it's now been 888 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That, my friends, is good news and a great way to get the weekend started. We'll see you back here on Monday for Dog Nation Daily.